Welcome to the Journeys of Peace podcast. I'm Terry Elton with our guest, Jerry Johnson. Welcome, Jerry.
Pastor, thank you for having me. First of all, I have been a member of this church over 50 years.
Wow.
Sharing it both. So anyway, when I think about the three things, the first thing that comes to mind is that I was born and raised on a farm in Montevideo. Yes, southwestern Minnesota. Right. On the farm, we lived 1 mile away from my grandpa Johnson.
Oh, cool.
Which was one of the farms that we farmed. And then we lived 2 miles from my mom's dad, my grandpa, Weckers. And so we were very closely tied together and did a lot of sharing back and forth, that is, work and machinery and things like that. At home, we had beef cattle.
Okay.
And we also had hogs. And so, you know, and we raised calves and we raised piglets. So we always had that cycle going on. At my grandpa's Weckers farm, they milk cows.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 365 days a year, twice a day, in the morning and night. And I helped over there a lot. So we were hardworking farm kids. And my brother and I, we essentially dad did the planting and he did the harvesting. And my brother and I pretty much did the cultivating and that type of work, the maintaining of the crops. So I'm the oldest. I had a twin sister. So there was the three of us. And my brother and I, as I said, pretty much did a lot of the work. Harvest was a big time because the neighbors got together to share equipment and labor and things like that. The fun part of it was having everybody together. And that was silo filling was one of the times where everybody got together. And then it was before combines when I was a little guy. And so the thrash machine would come and set up in the yard, and they would blow out the straw and make this big straw pile. And
So how long were you on the farm?
I was on the farm until I went to college.
Okay.
I was told by mom and dad, you need to go to college. Mm-hmm. So I was 18 when I went to South Dakota State University is where I started.
All right. What's something else about you?
So music.
Music
is a big part of my life, has been forever. I sang in a church choir since 7th grade.
Wow.
I sung in a church. I was in the senior choir then because they didn't have enough members. My doctor's wife, Joyce Hagberg, Dr. Hagberg's wife, Joyce, was our choir director.
Cool.
And obviously, they were members of our church, so she taught us. And I also was involved in the choir in high school, too. So I did go through a one-room school. Yes, one through grades one through six. We had one teacher. And so we had a little bit of singing and things like that. We put on these skits and programs. They were sometimes a little bit musical, too. So we had a lot of fun with that. I was in an operetta in high school. I was the constable. Oh. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
That was when I was a senior.
When did you pick up the instruments that you play?
First of all, we didn't have any money.
Yeah.
My sister took piano lessons, but she was the only one that there was anything invested in. So kind of picked up the guitar myself. In fact, I did pick it up myself, and also the harmonica. I was a closet musician. I played at home. A friend of mine, Bob Nygren, who was in the band here, one day they were visiting our house and he saw a picture of my guitar. He says, "Whose guitar is that?" And I said, "Well, it's mine." He says, "What do you mean it's yours? You play guitar?" I said, "Well, kinda." And he convinced me to get in the church band. So I came out of the closet and started playing. My third thing is education. Mom and dad, we were poor farmers, and they just felt that we needed to get away from the farm. So they convinced us to go to school. And so I'd already mentioned I went to start at South Dakota State University. So I had an English teacher when I was a senior in high school. For some reason, he just didn't like me. And he made it very clear that I would never go anyplace. He knew I was going to college, but he said, you're not going to make it. And so I decided, well, I'm going to prove him wrong. So I went to South Dakota State and was there for a year. But during that year, I fell in love with Sherry. Mm-hmm. She got a scholarship to Concordia in Moorhead. So I made the switch and moved to Moorhead. Eventually, we both graduated from Moorhead State. So I got my baccalaureate at Moorhead. I had to get my master's degree just because of the work I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I got my master's degree. And then it came along. I was a two-year college administrator for many years. And when the schools moved to higher learning accreditation, the administrators had to have a doctorate. So I threw my name in a hat, went through the process, the front-end process, and ended up getting admitted at the U to get my doctorate. So I went through that. So the long and short of it is, believe somebody. Uh-huh. Whereas I had other teachers that were very reinforcing and things like that along the way. So
you talked about your 50 years here at LCP. What got you connected here? And I bet this community has made a difference in your life.
First of all, we meandered around. We came down here. Sherry and I have always been in church. And mm-hmm. so we went to Trinity Lutheran in Moorhead.
Uh-huh.
When we were there. And then when we came down here, we started meandering around. We didn't know anything about this town.
And this is the first place you lived when you moved here?
Yes. Okay. Because we lived yeah. in Moorhead, but then we yeah. came down here. So we started just meandering around. We're up to Grace up on I-94. A mm-hmm. Few other churches, can't remember their names right off the bat right now. But then we ended up coming down here. And I can't remember if we made one visit or two visits or three visits or whatever. But it wasn't long thereafter and Pastor Dick Hodges knocked on our door. Mm-hmm. And so he said that you need to have a church home. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Yeah.
He convinced us right off the bat because we were kind of lost souls in this big town. Mm-hmm. We were from a town of 5,600. And we wow. came to this town and we were kind of lost souls.
Yeah.
Moorhead and Fargo was much bigger, but not anything like no. this town.
No.
So this was a big thing for us to get involved in the church here. It's yeah. been that way ever since.
Well, and it seemed like a natural place to build community.
Right.
So how has this church made a difference for you over the years?
This church has been an ongoing thing for both Sherry and I. Mm-hmm. We both came from very heavily faith-based homes. Our folks were very involved in church. Our grandpas and grandmas were mm-hmm. very involved in church.
Yeah.
I was baptized Missouri Synod in mm-hmm. my grandma's German Lutheran mm-hmm. church, where she played church organ forever. Yeah. My grandpa was very involved in things. On the other side is the Swedish Lutheran Church, mm-hmm. My grandpa Johnson. And so that was kind of a strange twist. My dad had taken on an insurance policy under a company called Modern Woodmen, which was a fraternal organization. Mm-hmm. And when he did that, they told him he could no longer belong to the Missouri Synod Church. I was baptized there, but then I was confirmed at
the Swedish
Salem Lutheran huh. Church. So
cool.
That's the way that went, confirmed, etc. The church has been always a piece of mm-hmm. our lives, and it's been a huge support base. I've been up and down, particularly with health issues,
mm-hmm.
and the church is, and some particular people in this church mm-hmm. have been very supportive. In fact, those that are involved in the health field mm. to kind of, you know, consult with me and help yeah. me and pray with me,
yeah. you know,
those kinds of things. So it's been yeah. huge. That's right. Well, you know? A big part of it has been church choir
mm.
to, you know, be with people very closely
yeah.
day in and day out. They're very close friends.
Cool.
And, you know, have been very supportive along the way, and others too.
Yeah.
The thing about church, you get out of it what you put into it. Mm-hmm. And there's much more. The Sunday morning is wonderful. There's no doubt about it. But there's much more to it than that.
Yeah.
And that's the people, because the people make up the church. And so
yeah.
I've had opportunities to be employed in other places, several along the way. And one of the factors that held us down was the fact that we had Lutheran Church of Peace.
That's pretty amazing. So what's one dream you had as a kid?
I wanted to be a power transmission engineer. That was electrical power, not mechanical power.
How did you know you wanted to be that?
Well, I was always interested in electronics and electricity, always interested. And I had a lot of tinkering and a little bit of a very mediocre shop up in the attic at home. And I had, you know, some equipment there, and I monkeyed around with things, made sparks.
Yeah,
I did one time go down to REA, and I had an interview. I think it might have been in my junior year or something like that. But then I had a shop teacher that said, "Jerry, I want you to do this." And he was on me. He was on my brother, too. So I ended up going that track. So I moved into education.
That's cool.
So it wasn't something that wasn't planned necessarily.
Yeah.
But that's the way it happened. And it was a teacher kind of the opposite scale with me, which was a mentor and a person that believed in me.
Yeah.
So, and on the farm, the great thing about growing up on a farm is you learn how to fix things, you know how to make do, you know how to do this, you know how to do that, where you don't necessarily have those opportunities when you're a city kid.
Right.
I worked with the trade unions for several years when I was in two-year college administration, and they always were looking for individuals from the farm because they knew that they were going to be good workers. They have, understood what work is. They had good work ethics, and they had perhaps not only the aptitude, but some experience to where they knew which end of the hammer you hit the nail on. So that type of thing. And they felt strongly about that. Even though farm work was hard and sometimes pretty disgusting, I look back at that and say, I'm really glad that I was born and raised on a farm.
Yeah.
And Sherry feels the same way.
Yeah. So how has your life been different than you imagined?
Well, the thing that's been pretty unsettling with me is that in 1997, Sherry had ovarian cancer. And she was correcting papers. I know it was either in May or the first week in June. I just don't remember when for sure. But she came up the stairs. She had her office downstairs. She was correcting papers. She came. She says, "I don't know what's wrong, Jerry. I am just terribly sick." And I looked at her. Yes, I knew she was sick. She just looked it. I said, "You're getting in the car. We're going to St. John's Hospital." So hauled her up there. And she had kind of a bulge. And they first thing they had to do is give her a pregnancy test. Well, she was not able to have any children for obvious reasons. So they had to give her a pregnancy test, and that proved false. So the doctor called me in the room, and he says, "I have to tell you something right now. I'm almost certain your wife has cancer." I said, "You got to be kidding me." And it was very hard. I thought I was going to lose her.
And that was like that day.
Yeah, that day. So she had this lady doctor that operated on her, and she had a very close connection with her teacher and mentor from the U. So they consulted, I guess, evidently during the surgery and things like that. She had this tumor the size of a football. And but the thing about it is they checked the margins and things like that, and there was no evidence of any other cancer. So she never had radiation or chemo or anything like that.
Wow.
Well, and I think I mentioned Bob Nygren's name before. Mm-hmm. In 2011, Bob died of lung cancer. Mm-hmm. And he was my closest friend. Mm-hmm. And we played in the church band together because he, you know, would talk me into doing that, et cetera. So our families were together. It was the Keys, the Nygrens, and us. We were cool. Always together. So he died of cancer, and that was hard, you know, to lose your best friend. But at that time, in December 2011, I was sitting in the sanctuary. His daughter, Madeline, called and said she wanted to come to the sanctuary. And it was all beautiful for a Christmas decoration. So we went in there, and I'm sitting there, and I'm having symptoms. And I'm saying to myself, I didn't say anything to anybody. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying to myself, I think I got lung cancer. I eventually went to the doctor, and I had x-rays and tests and things like that, and they said, you don't have lung cancer, you've got pneumonia. So they went through treatments with antibiotics, steroids, and things like that, and it wasn't getting any better. So then they referred me to a lung specialist doctor. So I went there, and we're talking, and he's kind of, you know, talking around things. I finally said, now, do you mean I might have lung cancer? He said, Jerry, I'm certain you have lung cancer. So it was within a day or two, I went up to St. John's, and they inserted a tube down into my lung and took a biopsy and things like that, and I found out I had lung cancer.
Wow.
So the things happen just so quickly when that goes on, particularly yeah. your first incident. You're flying from one thing to the next, you know, doctors and trying to figure it out and all this kind of things. I was hooked up with Dr. Louis Jacques. He's down at United Hospital. He did my surgery, took off half my lung. Of course, I had to have chemotherapy. I had one treatment of chemotherapy, and I told Sherry I'd rather die. Mm-hmm. I was sick for a week. I couldn't do anything. I just was horrible. It affects different people different ways, right. But I couldn't take it. So I said, I'm not doing it anymore. So I quit. And a year later, you know, you have your periodic CT mm-hmm. scans. A year later, I go in for a CT scan. Be danged if I don't have cancer in the upper part of my lung. Again, Dr. Jacques took out the top half of my lung. So I have one lung.
Wow.
In the follow-up, he went through and he looked. He leaned over and he said, Jerry, I know you don't like chemotherapy, but I'm going to tell you something. If you don't take chemotherapy, you're going to die.
Wow.
Like in no time. You have to take chemotherapy. I said, okay, I'll try it. Well, what happened is they still gave me platinum-based chemo and a bunch of other drugs, but it was a different type of platinum-based mm-hmm. chemo. And it was more tolerable. And I went through that cycle of treatment. Unfortunately, I was told that even though they got it out of there, I probably had 3 or 6 months to live. And I went home kind of in shock after my oncologist told me that.
Yeah.
I went home and I sat down on a piece of paper and I started writing on every resource that I could think of for cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. People that I knew or, mm-hmm. you know, places I heard about. Anthony's, my oldest son, Anthony's brother-in-law and his sister-in-law, both were PhD bio.
Oh, wow.
Did bio study in cancer, and he was working at John Hopkins, that type of thing. So I thought about wow. that. I thought about Mayo. I thought about this. I thought about everything under the sun. And it finally dawned on me, I'm a brother Mason. Why am I not calling the guys that I know at the U? So I called up a guy's name was Steve Johnson. I called him up. He worked for the Minnesota Medical Foundation. I said, Steve, I'm in trouble. I need to talk to somebody about, is there any alternatives that I could take? And he said, yeah, I'll hook you up with a doctor. So Dr. Robert Kratzky was his name. This was on a Thursday. Monday morning, I was in his office at the U, University of Minnesota Sonic Cancer Hospital. He came in the room. He had a file folder, but he never opened it. And he rattled off my history like I could not believe what he knew. He knew more about me than I knew. And he said, there's a 1% chance that I can help you. That's all I'm going to give you. I said, well, 1% is much more than 0%. So I took him up on it. So he said, you've not had a genome study. And this was early in the stages where they weren't doing these kind of things. So they had my biopsy at United. It still was there.
Wow.
However they do that, I don't know. But the specimen, if you will, was there. Mm-hmm. So he sent that out for genetic testing. And it came back, and there was a certain mutation called ROS1.
Okay.
That was the predominant cause of my cancer. Mm-hmm. He identified then a drug that's just evolving out of the laboratories. And so he administered that, and I got away with that it worked for about 9 years.
Wow.
So taking a pill once a day. Subsequent to that, I've had to go through more therapy. In the last go around, I had another platinum-based chemo as well as immunotherapy. They feel that the immunotherapy slowed things down, but it continues. So I kind of have a black cloud over my head of this cancer that lingers in my remaining lung. There's no one in our families identified as having cancer. And either, well, Sherry's aunt had breast cancer, but there was no one in our families, that is our moms and dads, grandmas.
Yeah.
Didn't, there was no cancer in the family. So
now you both have.
Now we both had it. And it's like, I wasn't planning on having to go through this.
What's different for you today than before, and maybe even before Sherry's diagnosis? Because it sounds like that was really the first disruptor.
Well, what's different is you view life as a lot more precious than before. Yeah. I used to joke that, it's another birthday coming along. It didn't mean anything. It really didn't. No. Now, I look at myself and I never thought I'd be 76 years old, ever.
Yeah.
Just didn't think I'd see the light of day that long.
Yeah.
The major thing that's different is how precious life is.
Yeah.
How blessed I am.
It's not over. A cancer diagnosis is rarely over.
Right.
It's not like an appendectomy.
Well, you know, the thing about it is this science is God-inspired. I mean, these people, they can't just go through. I was in research for a while at 3M. Mm-hmm. There's so much failure and so much you can get any place.
Yeah.
And to think that people can persist and persist and persist.
Blows me away.
Yeah. And eventually something evolves. It's because of this persistence, it ends up happening. And so you take medicine in general. And specifically cancer, so much has evolved since I was first diagnosed, because I would, if it were not for what has come out of the sciences, we would not be sitting here talking right now.
Yeah, wouldn't it's amazing. Happen. How has faith, how would you describe your faith journey, and how has faith played into this part? You talked about growing up, right? Yeah. How about this stage?
I'm going to be honest and say that there's been some ebbs and flows, sinusoid, if you want to look at it from an electrical standpoint, in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's never gone away, ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get hit with something, then you're thinking that, why me? And you know, I don't deserve this. And if God really loved me, Why is he putting me through this? I think corporate worship is so important. Yeah, you know, I hear about these people that never go to church. You know, I have my own spirituality, and you know, I look at this and I look at that. But being in church on Sunday morning is a reinforcing experience. And so, if you got out of the wrong side of the bed in the morning, and I've done that plenty of times. By the time I get done with church, the message of Christ through word and through music and those things, and my friends that are here in church, I come out a different person. Typically when I walk out of this building. So is there any kind of major switched off ever? No, it's not been that way. I could not imagine not having the roots that I have, and then the experiences that I've had throughout my life to reinforce things. Right, I get to go to my grandkids' confirmation here coming up in May. That's an exciting thing for us.
One of the gifts of this community is the prayers and the genuinely praying for the good, the bad, the hard, the things that aren't going to have come out as we hoped.
That's right. And this church is very supportive of each other. And problems are identified. They're not kept under the rocks. They're identified. And so I think there's a tremendous amount of prayer. When I first got cancer, I kind of kept my mouth shut about it. You know, when I first got hit, then of course everybody knew I was in the hospital. So, but I found out that, you know, along the way that I need prayer. I need support, not only from the physical side of medical treatment, but from the psychological side.
So that leads right into the last question. What gives you hope?
My wife.
Yeah.
I don't know of anybody that's more positive.
Yeah.
In life, they're my wife, and so many people. Oh, geez, my wife, this, that, and the other. If we had a pick or a quarrel, but my wife is, she's unbelievable. So I'm really glad that she and I hooked up.
You've been the spouse of a person diagnosed with cancer, and you have a spouse who has done that,
right?
And not only is Sherry a wonderful human, but that sense of how do you accompany somebody in this journey?
Right.
That's just a hard ask for anybody.
And she is, for me, she has never backed away. She has always been there when I, because I've had some tough times, and she is always there, and she's always supportive and things like that. So there's other things relative to hope, and being immersed in gospel music gives me hope. It's the message, and it's the music. I just think about music from this standpoint, and its impact. You watch TV and it's a suspense, you know, scene. And so you had this suspenseful music, and then something's going to happen. And so you've got this, you know, foreboding, you know, that's going on. Well, that's just the way it is. It's a wonderful thing for a man to have, but me, especially for gospel music. And I put on my headphones. I go in my music room and I pick my guitar and I, you know, turn on Alan Jackson as gospel, you know, song, whatever that.
I think music has history, and it transcends the moment, right?
Exactly.
It connects us to things beyond the right now, what we can touch and feel and see.
Yes.
And that's part of hope. It's the transcendent and connectivity of it to something bigger than ourselves, right?
Yep. And then there's other things like my boys, you know, to have two boys that are really smart and hardworking and doing well. Nature gives me hope. Just the seasons, you know, the spring and how things sprout, and then, you know, growing of things, being a farm person, to go out and Sherry and I we get in the car and we drive around. We watch, yeah. The farms in Wisconsin. We, you know, see the stuff coming out, sprouting out of the ground, and soon growing into crops, that type of thing. So I used to go out to Monty when Sherry's folks were still living in, and her dad, always, we'd have to get in the pickup, and we'd go to every field and every farm.
Yeah,
you know, we'd take a look at the crops.
Yeah,
that was everything to him. I liked it. You know, it was a lot of fun to do that, and gave us a chance to bond and talk about things. And the fact that we've still got relatives in farming, you know, that have the family farms from both sides, that gives me hope.
Yeah,
and their kids now.
Yeah.
Are taking over or have taken over. So,
I think that's also a gift of farming. We are now stewards of the Elton Farm.
Sure.
That's over 100 years.
That's so cool.
And I'm a city girl.
Yeah.
I first went to school in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But it's something to be a steward of a beautiful land with rolling hills, and we have a little lake that's a part of it, and my kids love up there, and it is an interesting tie, right, to place.
Yeah,
that's really different than the city. How fun to see that land continue.
Oh,
you know,
it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, Jerry, you have a long, powerful story of this place. Thanks for bringing us back to those farm days.
Yeah.
But also thanks for reminding us that God's is present in those hard days. It gives us people around us to make faith come alive. Thanks for telling us your story today.
Barbara Chuck.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.